Good morning and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. I'm your host, Jackson Raymer, with alongside Devin Connell, Jacob Lovelace. How you fellas feeling tonight?
Better than I did on Friday and Saturday, man. I think, we said that, and Will said this, he's not going to be here to defend himself. I'm sure he will be on the next episode. We said that there was no way he was going to win the press conference. And boy, did he prove us wrong. Not just us, but it looks like a lot of Gator Nation is excited after listening to an hour straight of John Sumrall directly injected into our veins. I like what I heard. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, man. I thought John can get me fired up. You know, I think there's two separate things in this process. You know, we could be upset at, you know, maybe Scott Strickland's process throughout this whole thing, but you know, I think John had a good answer today when asked about the previous coach being a G5 coach, and he just, two different people judge us differently. So I think that's what we do as fans. And yeah, man, I mean, he can get you fired up.
Yeah, it is very encouraging. Like Dev mentioned, welcome, Sam. Thanks for joining us tonight. We are missing Will tonight, but I believe he's preoccupied responding to all the replies he's gotten with his change of tune in the last 48 hours. I know he's getting hammered online. The previous hashtag is say no to Sumrall, to now he's rowing the boat. And
he's got Dan Wolkin in his DMs, national reporters calling him out for his own takes. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. It just shows again that we might be the needle. We joked that we stabbed ourselves with the needle after the ejecting ourselves with the Lane Kiffin sweepstakes. But all in all, great, great Monday for John Sumrall in Gainesville. Sam, I know you just got back from work. Did you catch any of the Sumrall press conference today?
I did catch some bits and pieces of it, and forgive my sign, not super prepared. I still got the help wanted sign. But
hey, now we got our guy.
I was just going to say, after the bits and pieces I saw, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. It was refreshing to see. I think it's very – you don't often see coaches lose a press conference. More times than not, they typically will win the press conference because, you know, they have a prepared speech and everything. But it was refreshing to see. And just he seemed to be 100% owning it. I think he knew what he was walking into. The Lane Kiffin mention in his second stanza, we didn't even get to the third stanza of our new coach's opening presser, and we got a Lane mention. So that kind of made me crawl a little bit. But I think he was definitely just poking fun at it. I think he knows what he's walking into, but in a good way. He seems, you know, he said it himself, I'm built for this. And I'm a little bit more excited to find out than I was previously this weekend. But like I mentioned, a lot of that anger and disappointment was directed toward our athletic director and not necessarily Sumrall, but refreshing to see him talk in front of the Gator logo today for the first time. I liked what I saw and heard.
I agree. Well, we've got a special guest and a new face coming on the show tonight. We've got Allie Peek, host of a Peek Inside Florida Gators football show on YouTube. Welcome, Allie.
Hello, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. How about yourself? Thanks for joining. Especially on a late notice and a late night Monday.
Well, the good news is at night is actually my best time because Eric can have to put the kids to bed and I get to talk football. So it kind of works out. Invite me late at night anytime.
Well, we've had Billy Latsko on and Tate Casey, both with four children under the age of like 13. So once they get them in bed, we are very we're used to the schedule at this point.
That is the time. I was with both of them this weekend, and we also have four, actually five now. My nephew lives with us, and all of our children were together, and it's like absolute chaos when that happens. But Billy and Eric got, I'm not sure if cursed is the right word. We'll go with blessed. Lots and lots of girls, and so there's yes. A lot of estrogen when we all get together.
Are you, do you have four girls as well?
We have four girls.
That's a lot. Well, yeah, I work with Billy, so we're, and Billy's been on the show, so we're good friends with him. But we were just chatting about John Summerall's introduction press conference today. I know it's certainly a change of tone we've had in the last 48 hours. I know Friday we'll get the Kiffin news, and you know, we're all on the Lane train, but now we're the leaders of the Row the John boat. So what were your thoughts on Summerall's opening press conference today and how he kind of won over the fan base?
Well, I think it was Sam that said it's hard to lose a press conference. And I think that that is accurate. But he said all the things that Florida fans wanted to hear. On paper, you're like, another G5 coach from the state of Louisiana. Like, how did we get here? And so I think it was important for him to separate himself early and kind of show us the differences. And I feel like he did that. I think he is so much more aggressive. I don't know if y'all listen to some of Spurrier's like quotes afterwards. Like he can't help but like backhand compliment people and just tell you exactly how he feels. And he said something about like, well, the team takes on the personality of their coach, and you can tell that, you know, he wants to win. And he kind of paused in a way that made me feel like he probably thought that Napier's teams also took on his personality a little bit. And, you know, that's a difference, but he won me over. And I was pissed at Strickland. I think it's okay to be angry. I think that the way that the coaching search was handled was stupid in a lot of fronts. Like I don't understand how we are a top public university and we are so bad at this. I think the PR of sending the exact script to every like major Gator with a following and everybody sends it all at the same time is such shoddy PR work. But I liked Summerall. Like he won me over a little bit, and now I'm back on the boat, I guess.
Yeah, no, we had some text messages about that yesterday with the CCP type propaganda that was being bolstered online. But it was, and Devin and I rewatched the Billy Napier introductory press conference from 3 years ago, and what a difference. I mean, it's like the Jim McElwain reference of dead fish in Publix, mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it felt like.
I don't know how we bought this last year or last time. Like watching it back is kind of horrifying, right?
You went from the monotone, no personality, just dead fish is the perfect way to put it, to a guy that you were worried was going to jump into the media scrum and run somebody over. That was kind of the feeling you got, the energy that you got from Summerall. I thought that one of the most endearing parts was him talking about his family and what, you know, his kids' questions were when it was time for him to explain to them that they were moving and taking a new job. And then the part about having options, and you know, obviously his wife went to Auburn. He had the chance to go to Auburn. That was their top choice for a long time, pretty publicly. What did you think about that specifically, and how, you know, other SEC schools were after Summerall, and it was ultimately Florida that won out in the end?
Well, on the family stuff, I had actually talked to Napier's people over the last few years to tell them, like, you guys are losing the PR battle. If you want to get grace later on, it's like a currency. So you do the fluff pieces. You tell us, hey, I got to run out of this press conference because I got to pick up so-and-so from volleyball practice. You make yourself human. It's a lot harder to hate Hadley and Hayden's mom than it is to hate, you know, Coach Wilbur out there or whatever. And so humanizing yourself and including your family is important, I think. And that's something Napier didn't do at all. He shielded his family. I know his wife's name's Allie only because that's my name. I couldn't tell you his kids' names. I can still tell you Mullen's kids' names. I can tell you Muschamp's kids' names. I can tell you Meyer's kids' names. I can tell you Spurrier, who's got a bajillion kids, his names, their names. And we knew so little. And it's not that he was rude about it, but he was so sheltered that he never collected that goodwill. And you want to cash that in eventually. When there's a bad loss, you want to be Hadley and Hayden's mom. You want them to have some sympathy and like you as a person. And Napier never gave us that opportunity. So I think it's important for Summerall to do that. It's smart. It's what somebody with, you know, PR training would actually do, right? And as far as everybody else wanting him, I mean, I don't know how public it is or not public it is, but he turned down Mississippi State last year when they were looking. Obviously, he was really far into the contract negotiations with Auburn. I have a friend that's a big booster there, and he called me on Saturday and was like, "Are you seriously? Are you guys going to undo, you know, the work that we have done here?" And I'm like, "I mean, I kind of hope we don't, but you know, I've changed Saturday." And Ole Miss would have jumped in there if given the opportunity. He might have gone to Kentucky had they fired Stoops 3 days earlier. And he did have options. And I think it's important for him to tell Gator Nation, "I chose you. I know that you maybe didn't choose me as your first option, but you were my first option when I had choices." And it's important for us to ride with the guy that did pick us.
100%. And touching on the kids, I think his son has a great name. Just wanted to point that out. And I too, also named Sam, would love to meet Tim Tebow. So that'd be pretty cool. But as we've learned a little bit more about our pursuit of Sumrall, it's come out that Urban Meyer seemed to play a pretty big role in this. And I know you spoke with him recently. Just what do you kind of make of that? Did you get any like indication from him that it could be an option, or what do you make of the Urban and all of this? Cause it seems like him and now we know that Danny Werfel was an instrumental part as well. What do you make of Urban's involvement kind of moving in silence to get Sumrall for us?
So when I talked to Urban, it was about 2 weeks ago, and I don't think they had gone in depth with Sumrall yet at that point. And he said on air, but he also said off air that he's told Lane to take this job. And I knew Werfel was involved because somebody that I talked to on a regular basis told me the beginning of November that that's who they were sending each time they met with Lane, was that they were sending Werfel because it was easier for him to get through the airports. Nobody's questioning. He lives in Orlando, so when he's flying out of there, it's not anything anybody's thinking anything of. A lot of people don't even recognize him anymore in airports. So I knew that he was involved. But as soon as, I want to say it was last Friday, I got a call saying that Urban had interviewed him twice. And as soon as I heard that Urban had interviewed him twice, I knew there was no way Lane was going to come, because if he was trying to push Lane there, he wouldn't play two candidates against each other. So at that point I was kind of like, all right, we are out with Lane if he's all in on this. But I've been told that Urban thinks he's another Urban in terms of intensity level and dedication to the craft. And, you know, that means a whole lot more to me than what Scott Strickland thinks about who should be our next head coach.
Yeah, the intensity was, you could feel it on, you know, watching through the screen. One quote that kind of jumped out to me was he was talking about the fans, and not in a way where he was talking about fans' expectations that felt like a jab, but he acknowledged that Florida fans want to win. And I felt like maybe with Billy, there was a lot of kind of at the beginning, the PR for Billy was like, we're going to build a foundation. And maybe the foundation with Mullen wasn't great, but they won right away. Just kind of what were some of the differences that you saw from maybe the Billy Napier press conference a few years ago that John kind of hit on today?
Well, I'm a lot older than all of you guys, so I have been through a lot more coaching searches. And I do think that each time you hire somebody, they're trying to fix the glaringly obvious problems with the previous administration, which sometimes creates new problems. And I think for Napier, he wanted this solid culture. We felt like he had a lot of really good guys who were there for the right reasons, there for each other. I know for a fact when Mullen was there, Mullen told us many a times that he felt like he inherited a program that didn't enjoy winning, that they were scared of losing, but they didn't have fun winning. And so part of his MO as head coach was to be more relaxed, let them have fun, kind of let them be kids, which I think was great intentioned at the beginning, but led to some of the spiraling that happened down the road, you know, the less caring, the, you know, whatever. So, but Napier told us it was going to take a long time in his press conference. He literally tried to lay out that this was going to be a 5-year plan, which is, I'm pretty sure, what he sold to Scott Strickland too. And he basically told us that straight up, this is a long process. And I think we all have PTSD from that. So it was really important for Sumrall to come out and say like, oh no, we're going to win right away. Not you've got another 4 years of misery before you can hope to sniff, you know, championship football. And I think that that was really important. I think it was important that he pointed out he wasn't going to bring his friends over, because that's also something that not only Napier, but Mullen had a reputation for. They wouldn't get rid of their friends fast enough. They wouldn't go outside their little tiny coaching bubble. So he did that for us. And, you know, Napier referred to us as Central Florida basement dwellers at one point. You know, like, I'm sure all five of the people sitting here, he was talking about those podcasters that, you know, hide in mom's basement or whatever. And several basically acknowledged that he saw we were batshit crazy online and he wanted it. And I kind of love that.
Yeah, we got a caller and a listener from New Orleans who's went to UF from New Orleans and is getting his MBA right now at Tulane, and was at the game Saturday night and was part of the tailgating experience with Summerall's brother. And so he got to chat with him a little bit, and he goes, yeah, well, we've seen all the replies and mentions into our recent tweets how, you know, they don't want us, but that kind of fuels Summerall, which is, you know, it's nice to see that he understands he's taken over a program that's ready to win. But you saw this firsthand with Eric, and I don't know if you've got spoken on it much, but I saw a little bit of Spurrier's questions and answers after the press conference today about how this team's got a lot of good players, or Urban, sorry. This team's got a lot of good players. You know, Ron Zook had a lot of good players too, but they just could not find that winning culture. A lot of one-score losses, especially the year he got fired. But what similarities do you see with just the talent we have? It's a little bit different with retention nowadays and NIL. But how, you know, we can kind of maybe see that same turnaround in a year or two and have a national championship college program.
We retain this roster, and we have, I think, first and foremost, you hire a badass strength and conditioning coach. I think that was the very biggest mistake that Napier made out the gate. You can't expect that somebody from Louisiana is capable of conditioning an SEC caliber team right off the bat. And, you know, for the players, they don't know what they don't know. So like Eric would tell you, they thought they were doing all the things right with Zook to put them in a position to be successful. They thought they were working hard. They thought, you know, they had the right plan to win. And then Urban came in and basically showed them that, like, you weren't pushing yourself at all, and completely ramped up. Workouts is where it started. Mm-hmm. I have been told that Summerall does mat drills. Tate Casey sent me a text and was like, mat drills are back. So I think that's going to be a good thing. But this football team has to get tougher. You can have all of the talent in the world, but if it's fourth quarter, games on the line, and you cannot will yourself into stopping your opponent, it doesn't matter that you're filled with five stars or that you have tons of talent. It is such a mental game. And I think that we did not focus on the mental toughness aspect for the last 4 years. We were a soft football team.
Allie, I think that the biggest concern I think I had, Will had, a lot of us had when we heard Summerall was the name that was kind of emerging from the pack and going to be the next coach, was the just the fact that he was another G5 coach from Louisiana, as unfair as that is to him. And he addressed that in the press conference. He said he's his own man. Maybe seemed a little bit fiery when he got that question. But more than that, I thought it was interesting how he acknowledged that at different places, you have to embrace the different ways that you're capable of winning at those schools. And that was something that excited me hearing him talk was, you know, you look at his offenses, it's run first. I watched their game against Charlotte on Saturday night, and they were getting in power eye and running the ball right at Charlotte's defense to try to play smash mouth football. A big aspect of the PR behind this announcement has been him acknowledging that explosive offenses are what is the expectation at Florida. He referenced Bob Stoops, who obviously in the early 2000s took over Oklahoma and was really the pioneer of this up-tempo spread offense with Sam Bradford and those guys back in the day. What do you make of him addressing that up front? And what are you looking for in an offensive coordinator hire, which is obviously much, much more important, and the microscope's going to be on that when you have a defensive-minded head coach like we do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really important. I think the entire point of the press conference was to show us differences. And, you know, think about the amount of times Napier was asked, hey, are you going to get an offensive coordinator? Are you going to change the play caller? And his answer all the whole time was, I think that I give us the best chance to win. He would always say, we want to stick with what got us here, which you know, I would always be like, here, you mean like here about to be fired here? Or, and of course he's referencing Florida. I would argue that Napier became a head coach despite his play calling a record, not because of his play calling record, but he made it abundantly clear that there was a plan that he took with him from stop to stop, and it was the plan, and there was no changing the plan. So I think it's really important to show, from Summerall's point of view, that he is adaptable, that he understands that what works at Tulane isn't going to work at the SEC. What works against Ole Miss isn't going to work against LSU. You know, your ability to adapt is key to survival. And you know, I think about when Urban Meyer came in and he wanted to run the spread offense. And he tells this great story about how when Florida lost to Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and like, side note, Eric sent me a text from the plane on the way home that said, I don't want to see anybody, that includes you, and went and sat in the stadium for like 5 hours after this loss. And this was their first season under Meyer, the 05 season. But Meyer said on the way home that they were like, okay, this is not going to work. We don't have the athletes to run what we want to run. So they went to his house, he and Mullen and Gonzalez and Adazio, and they sat around and drew up the system that they would run for the rest of the season and use in 06. It's when Billy Latsko got involved in the offense. Yep. But they realized the problem. They realized that it wasn't a one-size-fits-all plan that they wanted to run, and they adapted mid-season. And I think that's what made them such a dangerous coaching staff. And so I love hearing that he is open to using what his team has to be successful and the location that they're at. And I think that that is important. Now, as far as offensive coordinator goes, I want somebody that's going to score a ton of points. I despise being in 23-17 games. I cannot, particularly if you're going to be trash at special teams, which we have been for the last 4 years, like playing close games like that, playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win, kills me. I want a Kirby Smart psycho. I want somebody like, step on their throat. Don't pee on them if they're on fire. Like, I don't, Napier would bring them ice water. I don't, like, give me a crazy person all day long. I don't need you to be nice. Like, that is for the team pastor. And I do think it's an important hire. And I'm looking to see, do we go Power Four or do we wimp out and we try and say, like, oh, well, we got this guy from the G5 and we swear it's going to work. And that's going to dial my excitement back if that happens.
Is there any names that you might have in mind that kind of fit what you're saying, or anything you might, any names that you might be hearing?
I have not heard any names like solidly yet. And honestly, a very interesting Will Stein got a head coach, because that was one that I'd heard the very first night that, which I don't know if Will Stein's official at this point, but I'm pretty sure he's pretty close to official, if not. But I think somebody like that would be key. And I do think it's also important who you bring in as your defensive coordinator too. And you know, I've heard rumors that Ed O's getting a look. I think that would be interesting, or at the very least put him at defensive line. His son coaches at Tulane. And so there is a little bit of a connection there. And I think that would actually be a win over LSU too, which would be also exciting. And it could be somebody who could kind of come in right now while Tulane is playing, especially if they make the playoffs. Eric is in the background. He wants Billy Gonzalez to be the offensive coordinator and him to get to open up the playbook. I do think they keep Billy Gonzalez at wide receiver. I think that would be really smart. The man wants to retire a Gator. I don't think he has machinations of being anything other than a wide receivers coach. You cannot convince me he hasn't had opportunities over the years, and he's clearly chosen not to chase that down. So it's kind of a really stable hire too, because he'll be there forever. He'll probably outlast you. He's outlasted three other coaches. These hires do have to, they have to get them right. But I do think that you start at strength and conditioning.
For sure. And just talking on like the whole kind of structure of everything as he's building this staff, what do you kind of make of the hiring of Dave Caldwell as this kind of NFL GM? And all signs would indicate that we were kind of set on him regardless if it was Summerall, because he kind of said today that they hadn't worked together before and they've talked sparingly, but they're excited to work together. What do you kind of make of the switch in getting a guy like that to kind of umbrella the operation in a way?
I understand the concept. I do think taking contract negotiations, portal things, NIL off the head coach's plate is a good move. I just don't think that NFL to college, college to NFL translates that well usually. So I'm interested to see, is it different when it's more numbers and bodies than it is play calling and, you know, roster retention and things. But I honestly feel like Strickland did this to give himself a buffer between who he hired as the head coach and himself. There's somebody you can point to and blame if it fails. That's not you. And so I do think that there was some selfish aspect to this as well. And who knows, maybe we're ahead of the game and it's the wave of the future. But I really honestly think part of it is Strickland saving his own butt.
100%. We agree, because
very fair, very valid. You know,
the LSU, the CBS Sports, maybe it's just a Jimmy Sexton hit piece on Florida that came out, and the New York Post had an article, but LSU basically offered, whatever you're doing at Ole Miss Lane, you can come bring it here and we'll fund you for it. But that seemed to be kind of the holdup in the first few meetings with IAD and Lane, unfortunately. But special teams, we think just the game changers, which Napier called them, were game changers for the other team. Summerall said he was a special teams guy. Obviously, that was Urban's MO when he came to Florida. He let the coordinators be coordinators, and he kind of oversaw the special teams aspect. Have you gotten any other information or know anything historically about Summerall and his special teams?
I don't, and I kind of want to get into it and look more.
Yeah, because I do too.
I'm interested in that aspect. He told us, I think the quote was, it's going to have my fingerprints all over it, is what he told us today. And I mean, that is music to my ears. The special teams the last few years have been so abysmal and so dysfunctional, even behind the scenes. Like there was a time, it was last March, Eric was doing a kicking camp with the Townsend brothers here in Tampa, and all of Florida's current specialists were there. We're sitting around a table talking, and I'm like, guys, you were trash this year. Like, what in the world is going on? And they're like, well, you know, that's on us. It's hard to count the number of people out there. And there's just so many people on the sidelines and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whoa, you're responsible for counting your own guys before you go out there? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, you realize that's not normal. And they're like, no, it's totally. And I'm like, Eric, who counted for you? He names an assistant strength coach. Johnny, who counted for you? He names an assistant strength coach. Tommy, who still counts for you? In the NFL, an assistant strength coach. So Florida was having their players police themselves to make sure they had the right number of men on the field. Lots of these guys are on the field on defense before they switch over to punt. So like none of this makes any sense. But for a staff that had two guys to hold Napier's cup of coffee, it is absolutely insane to think that we couldn't allocate somebody on the sidelines to make sure we were doing things correctly. An adult who is in charge. This is your one job. I know, like, we joke about the mat, and like, I mean, I guess maybe that helped this year, and it's better than not having it, since we're, you know, relying on 19-year-olds to know where everybody is at any given time. But I can't remember who said it, but the quote is essentially, how you play special teams is how you play the game. It's how you approach the game. And it was lazy. There was no attention to detail. There was no incentive. One of the things that was said at that dinner in March was, well, no, you know, nobody wants to play special teams. That's how you got on the field with Urban Meyer. You weren't allowed on the field on offense and defense if you weren't first contributing on special teams. So the concept that, like, oh, we had to round up some bodies because nobody was willing to go out there, that trickles from the head down. Your attitude about special teams comes from the top. So I am relieved and excited to hear that it'll be a focus. I think it wins football games for you. It also costs you football games, and we've seen that too. So make it clean first and then make it a weapon second.
Absolutely. That's something that I know me and my dad have complained about watching Gator football since Urban left, is the lack of blocked kicks, the lack of fake punts, fake field goals. It's just something that was such a huge part of changing the momentum back in those days that you haven't seen utilized at Florida since then. Mm-hmm. One other thing that Summerall talked about today that I thought was interesting was player retention and how he had to use the portal at Tulane. And I think that obviously the biggest thing that everybody will be looking at outside of the coaching staff hires is how this roster gets retained. That was one of my initial concerns, was would the players buy in to Summerall, to his pedigree, to his resume, and stick with it. And I think that having guys like Miles Graham and Vernell Brown III on both sides of the ball that are legacy guys, that are logo guys, will help with roster retention and help with the way that the portal gets utilized, especially during this transition class. What do you make of his comments on player retention, on portal usage, and how we can expect that to kind of change as his time in Gainesville gets off the ground?
I almost wondered if there was a shot at Lane Kiffin in there when he was talking about that using the portal and how he'd prefer to, you know, high school and sprinkle in portal. And he's right, you know, at Tulane, anytime somebody got good, a Power Four school was going to pick off the player the next year. That's got to be a really hard position to be in. And I mean, it's always historically happened, but not at the rate that it happens now. And that's got to make coaching difficult. And you want to replace, you don't have time necessarily to groom somebody from high school to be ready to take over because the spot opens and you've got to fill it right away. So, but he's in the most fertile high school recruiting grounds in the country now at the University of Florida. He, you know, Urban used to talk about how he would try and recruit within a 3-hour radius of Gainesville because he could be home to have dinner with his family when he was done. And that was part of why he loved being in the state of Florida. And there's just so much high school talent here. I think that it's important to put an emphasis on that. I'm interested to see how he does because he hasn't been overly successful at it at his previous stops. And I mean, there are harder places to recruit at, but like Fitz did better than him before at Tulane. So I'll be interested to see how that goes. And hopefully that's not a lot of talk, but it is important. And I think retaining this roster, I mean, obviously that is what he's working on at this moment, is important. I think Miles Graham wouldn't have put out the post he's putting out today if he wasn't coming back. VB3's brother committed to us to be a walk-on a week ago. There's no way he's jumping ship. I can't imagine Vernell, his dad, would let him, you know, bail on this. I'm interested to see what he does with Lagway. Obviously, he was at the meeting. I think that that's a sign that Lagway wants to be there. He has stressed that he loves to be a Gator. I'm interested to see how he meshes with Summerall. If Summerall thinks that that's a project he wants to take on, is that the right fit for what he wants to run? But you got to get Jaden Ball back. I mean, that's like a non-negotiable. Do whatever it has to do. Hopefully DJ will take a pay cut, send some Ball's way. That is your number one absolute priority. But if you can retain those handful, you could be good immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think too, I mean, last year he lost his starting quarterback to Duke. I can't imagine the kinds of problems that he'll be experiencing dealing with it for him.
No, he will. Anybody that leaves will probably be because he says, like, you know, hey, you don't fit. Or could you, I mean, if you'd play for Billy Napier, why wouldn't you play for John Summerall? Like, where's the, everybody's so surprised tons and tons of high school kids aren't defecting. And you're like, you committed to the carpet salesman. I don't like, you found him cool. Why would you not be willing to test the waters with Summerall?
No, we're on the same page there. But Alan, we can't thank you enough for joining us this evening. If you would like to plug where our listeners can follow you, obviously she's very knowledgeable, super plugged in. We appreciate all the extra tidbits you provided us on the show tonight.
Oh, absolutely. You can follow me on YouTube at A Peek Inside Gator Football or on X. I'm old, so I'm still going to call it Twitter, at Ali_Peek. But this was fun, guys. We'll have to do this again.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us, Ali. Ali knows ball, guys. Give it a listen.
Bye, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ali. Well, that was great.
Yeah. Ali Peek, married to former Florida punter Eric Wilbur. So glad to have her on the show tonight, provide her insight. She knows what's going on. She's plugged in all over the country.
Yeah, I was I liked hearing about the Zook to Meyer transition, man. I think that's obviously you're looking at something right now with the Florida Gator football program where you hope it's a pretty quick fix, like it was with Urban, and that's best case scenario here. Obviously she had great insight on that. And so hopefully with some roster retention, this isn't a rebuild and next year, you know, they're competing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure when I talk to Billy Latsko, tomorrow, he'll be stoked to know mat drills are back. He's probably glad he doesn't have to be inside the gym doing those drills again. But when those former players visit, especially from that era, they're going to be excited to see some of their routine is coming back and incorporated into this new staff's their workout program. So, and I thought it was interesting, the John Summerall, when he walked into the facility today, he goes, "Damn, this is nice. Look at this weight room. Who do we share?" Like, nobody. You know, he had six other sports having to share the weight room at Troy and Tulane, which is not a jab at those programs, obviously, but just shows you kind of the obstacles they got to face at smaller programs like that don't have the resources we do. So him having the ability to incorporate his full schedule and have a set timeline and not have to, you know, work around other schedules is going to be key for him and for his success.
What do you guys make of, it feels like this is the most involved Urban has been in the Gators program since he left. Obviously the announcement that he's going to be getting entered into the Ring of Honor. But even when Mullen came back, I think he came back to the Swamp maybe once or twice, if that. What do you make of his involvement, not only in the search, but being there today for the press conference? I thought that was really interesting.
My first takeaway from that is he's done coaching. Like, I think everyone kind of knows that, right? But even the beginning of this search, I feel like maybe it was tongue-in-cheek, but people would kind of be like, dude, if Urban came back, like, we would take that, right? So I think it's immense that
Will Norris.
Right. So I think it's immense that he's done. And most people probably knew that. So it's not a huge shock. But yeah, getting in the good graces of Florida. And obviously I think it is kind of leading to that Ring of Honor. Obviously he was honored at the Tennessee game. I'm excited that he was a part of the search, man. Like, for all of Urban's flaws, I'm a Jags fan. So I've seen the best of Urban, the worst of Urban. The guy still knows how to win, man, especially at the college game. He knows about culture. He knows about finding talent. So I like that he was involved in this. And him speaking highly of John Summerall feels good.
For sure. And like you mentioned, like, his involvement, and I know I asked Allie, like, she had talked to him. And I think, to your point, Devin, and great point, Lovey, to say, like, yeah, I think that shows that he's, you know, signing off on coaching. Didn't even think of that, but that's probably nails it. But when she said that Urban sees Urban in Summerall, I think that can also, he wants to be a little bit more present. You know, doesn't seem like they've had a relationship prior to any of this, but it's nice to see Urban kind of coming out of the shadows a little bit. Obviously he's on Fox every week and does the show, but it seems like he's kind of shifted years, you know, as Urban Meyer, the previous Ohio State coach, but we all know that he's Urban Meyer, Florida Gator legend. And it's nice to see him walking around the halls again, and hopefully he can be involved. And to the whole special teams point too, like, it really kind of draws the parallels to him and to the whole Zook to Meyer transition. The, dare I say, the stars are aligning. I don't know.
I would like, obviously we've discussed this offline, but the Urban average over 40 points a game, you know, went to a Fiesta Bowl at Utah. We knew what kind of offense he was going to bring to us, and that's the biggest question mark now. But hearing the special teams was a sign of relief. And because, man, you can really change a game. Even when we have some of those sputter performances or you're playing against a really good defense on the road, special teams is a great way to kind of flip the game. But, yeah, seeing Urban, the way he left us, you know, retired, came back, and then left a year later, left a lot of sour taste in people's mouth. You remember the Tennessee game I talked about, the Ring of Honor, I had someone next to me, you know, not really applauding, and they disgusted him. A lot of fans feel that way. So he's been rocking Gator pullovers and polos, you know, throughout the years. Like Dev said, I know there's that famous picture, I think, is he next to Spurrier or behind Spurrier, that Miami game in Orlando in 2019? And that's kind of like the first time we've really seen him in a public setting with Spurrier at a game in quite some time. So seeing him back in the fold, part of the search, it gives you confidence, you know, just us as fans reading a resume, having everything identical on paper, resume-wise, geographical-wise, as Billy Napier had. But see Urban give his vote of confidence is – it's nice, because obviously he knows a lot more than us four podcasters do.
There's no doubt about that. I think one of the first episodes we had after Billy got fired, when we were discussing whether Urban would be a candidate for the Florida job this time, one of the points that I made was how Urban left Utah in a wonderful place. Kyle Whittingham has been there for 20 years since he left. When he left Ohio State, he left them in a place where they had Ryan Day, born on third base, finally broke through, won a national championship. So they have had sustained success in the time since he left those schools. And then the way that he left Florida and the position that Florida's been in the time that that's gone by since he left, I think that eats at him a little bit. And I think that his involvement in this search might be indicative of, you know, maybe the game's passed him by. It's not his time to coach anymore. But he does feel that sort of pull and that responsibility to try to help Florida get back to the place that it belongs, you know, and make the three programs that Urban left the largest mark on all be in a better position, you know, after he leaves. You know, it might have been 15 years too late at Florida, or 15 years in the wilderness before we get there. But I think that his involvement in this search kind of shows that pull he feels back to Florida to help us get back to the place that I'm sure he had hoped to have left us in when he did leave.
That was beautiful, Dev.
That was great. So much more eloquent and better than how we discussed.
One more Urban note too. I think it's huge. Like Mullen, when he was here and I was working around the UAA at that time, how big of a deal it was to have a coach and several coaches at the time on that 06 to 09 run, and having those players come back, the Joe Haydens, Lewis Murphys, the Major Wrights, and Ahmad Blacks. Having Urban around more, maybe that's a Spurrier-like role for him in the future as an ambassador. I think it's crucially important for Florida to be able to connect when they were so successful during those years, whether that's with recruiting, the guys now making sure messages are hitting home. So, I'm glad that he's around the program in some sense.
Well, Summerall had the opportunity to meet a national champion coach that is on campus right now. His first stop once he landed was Todd Golden, went to the basketball facility. So those two looked like they hit it off. They kind of come from the cut from the same cloth, I believe. You know, a little bit different wired. They love to compete. They love to win. They both can adapt. We've seen that through Golden so far. So it was great to see those two get along early. I'm sure they'll be hanging out. I love that Summerall is going to be attending Gator basketball games and other events, and his kids are stoked. They'll be watching Tuesday night as the Gators head to Cameron Indoor. And so we'll pivot to some basketball talk right now. We talked the previous show about the holiday schedule going 1-1 out west, and now for the out of conference schedule, this is when the grind begins. We get tonight at Duke, 7:30 in Cameron Indoor. I'll be going to that game. I'm excited. I mean, that's a bucket list arena to see the boys play. And then obviously next Tuesday in Madison Square Garden, we take on UConn. So two top five teams. We've already played another top five team in Arizona, a close loss out in Vegas. I know a few of us talked about Cameron Boozer and watching him against Arkansas. That guy's averaging 23-10 as a freshman. Todd Golden stated today in his interview session that he would take Boozer number one in the draft if he was an NBA GM. So Jake, just what's your excitement level? I don't know if we've ever played in Cameron Indoor. If it has, it's been a long time. So just watching that and seeing the Gators in that environment, because we've all watched a ton of Duke games growing up, obviously.
Right. The next two games, man, it's a good measuring stick going into the conference tournament or conference schedule. I think obviously things have been kind of clunky to start the year, but you have a chance to go get the next two games are going to be as good as quad one wins that you can get. And it's by no means any kind of like panic if you don't. Last year was different. They ran the table in the non-conference but didn't ever really get challenged, so you still had to pick up those quad one wins once you got to the conference schedule. But it's a really good chance to get the guys ready for conference play. I mean, playing Duke, playing UConn, that's what it's going to be like playing at Tennessee, you know what I mean? And then eventually, hopefully, into the NCAA tournament. So I'm just excited to see how they stack up. Hopefully, they can clean some things up, shoot the ball a little bit, stay in the game. And if they can get one of the next two, that'd be huge.
Absolutely. I think we opened as 9.5 point dogs. The line's down to 8.5 points. Would like to see it move. If it's already moving in Florida's direction, I imagine it could move another point or two before we get the tip off tomorrow night. Saw what I wanted to see on Friday against Providence. Obviously, I don't think Providence is, all that great of a team. It's not your dad's Providence with Billy Donovan running the point or anything. But you saw Xavier Lee shoot the ball a little bit better. You saw Boogie Flan shoot the ball a little bit better. I think that we've kind of said it before, but this team's really got to embrace being, you know, nasty on defense and shooting the ball. You know, I don't think that this team's ever going to be a team that shoots in the high 30s from 3-point range, but a team that at least, you know, it's enough of a threat that it loosens up your front court and lets them do what we expected them to be able to do before the season. So going into to Cameron Indoor is going to be awesome. It's probably the most iconic venue in college basketball. It's going to be a special night, top 15 matchup. They get to play the defending national champions, which is going to mean a lot for those guys to have the Florida Gators come into town. So hopefully we keep up the shooting front court. You know, I think they'll come ready to play. I think there's not going to be three non-conference games you can play in November and December quite like Arizona, Duke, and UConn. That might be three of the four Final Four teams when this is all said and done. So to get a win, you know, on a neutral floor against UConn, or to go into Cameron Indoor and get a win would be one of the best wins anybody gets in the country this year. So huge opportunities this week. Excited to see how the boys respond and hopefully come out on top.
Yeah, it might be one of the most iconic venues in college sports, let alone just basketball. So it'll be very cool to watch our Gators play there. I know over the years, I'm sure you guys might trickle to memory, but there's kind of a funny camera angle when you're watching a game at Cameron Indoor on ESPN. So we'll have to experience that as a Gator fan. But going to be a great opportunity, a great test. Like we've already mentioned, the teams that are with Duke and UConn on the schedule and already having played Arizona, some of the best teams in the country. And going to be a big night from the front court. Like you mentioned, the Boozers, how can they got to step up, you know, the Arizona game. The story was the true freshman, Koa Pete, the big man, came in and just absolutely dominated us. Maybe with seeing some film, you know, we're able to maybe put together a game plan to try to limit their star players. But it's going to be exciting to watch, and hope you have a good time, Raymer. And glad you don't have to camp out in one of those tents that they all have to use, you know, to get into Cameron Indoor. But the crazies, I'm sure they'll be crazy.
Yeah, I just looked. Last time we played at Cameron Indoor was 1998. We lost by 30. So hopefully a much better result.
We can only go up.
Can only go up from here.
Was that pre-Donovan or early Donovan?
That's Donovan joined in 96, 95, 96. So, yeah, it was Donovan. I think we went to, what was it, 99, 2000. We went to Donovan's first Final Four national championship game when we lost to Jason Richardson and Tom Izzo in the championship game. But, yeah, that was very early into the Donovan tenure. So, kind of the same time frame of their career. Obviously, Todd's had a little bit more success this early in his 4 year, 3.5 years in Gainesville. But, yeah, have you seen any word on Condon playing? I know Todd spoke to the media today. I didn't get to see all of his quotes, but
I didn't see an availability report, but I didn't see anything that said breaking Alex Condon out for the game against Duke. Yeah. I would say that they said that he could have won Friday, but they wanted to be cautious.
Okay. Well, I would be too if you're playing – Brian Providence, and you really need them back. So, Florida's been in a lot of foul trouble early, and we're going to have to utilize Micah, Ruben, Condon, and Hauk there down low to have some sort of presence and stop Boozer. I mean, this kid, you know, we were in the sweepstakes to get the Boozer twins, but unfortunately, Duke pays a lot of money, and it helps that their dad went there. So,
I hate the way the travel set up leading up to this game. You spend Thanksgiving week out in San Diego, come right back home, and then you're going to go up to North Carolina for this trip, come back home again, and then straight back up to New York next week. So it's a grind of a schedule here this week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, but the good news is our front court and our returning players and this coaching staff, you know, last year we got hosed in the NCAA tournament in a similar fashion, right? So after going to Nashville for the SEC tournament, we went out. Where was our first round game this year? It was in North Carolina. Then we flew all the way out to San Fran, back, and then to Texas. So, you know, they've probably got a good schedule, you know, with these challenges with the going from the West Coast home and then up the East Coast and North. So we gotta have a big night at a Boogie in Xavier. I mean, this is probably the biggest environment Xavier's ever played in, I imagine. I know Princeton probably had a few road games of this magnitude, you know, going to big arenas, but being a part of the Florida Gators, hopefully that 20-point scoring outing Friday against Providence is maybe turning the corner a little bit.
Well, it'll be intense, but it'll be a small gym. So
good point. It's
Madison Square Garden is a little bit bigger of a stage, but it's the team across the court that's slamming the floors and you know, the crazies with their hands and like shaking at you when you're trying to inbound the ball, that stuff that makes Duke a special and tough place to play.
Jackson's going to be setting picks on him. Put your hands down.
You know, keeping the crazies off Todd.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what kind of banter these nerds up in Durham, North Carolina, got for
the boys. They need to pack the house with crazies. The Breakfast Boys, we just need to send one, and we're sending our best one. So
that's right.
Make sure you wear your replica ring. Don't let them forget.
Yeah. No. What? How many rings do they have this century? I know we've got three. Duke might have one.
Doesn't Duke also have three?
Do they have three this century as well?
I think so. I think us, Duke, and UConn. UConn has more.
Blue blood.
Let's do a little more fact checking before we create some more online nemesis.
We don't need all of 2,000 Duke students in our mentions.
We've had our hands full the last few months. It didn't go our way, but we're rowing the John boat now. And they're going to cry.
Yeah, they've won three this century.
Well, that's why we fact check here on Breakfast with the Gators.
Exactly. We'll never.
The Breakfast with the Gators guarantee is that we're not going to get facts wrong, ever.
We might get opinions wrong, but we are volume shooters in that category. So,
speaking of wrong opinions, I really miss Will and Hunter. I wish that they were here tonight. They would have some takes to get off, some crow to eat. I mean, I have crow to eat. We all have crow to eat.
Some more publicly than others.
Some more publicly than others.
Will would be throwing out the Dan Campbell. That'd be Will's role.
He made the comparison of Dan Campbell. I think in the group text we had Dan Lanning and Urban Meyer, if they had a baby, thrown around in the group chat. So lying season is in full effect. I do still want to see the coordinator hires, but I definitely liked everything I heard today.
Yeah, no, I think we all agreed there. And we'll certainly dive into the coordinator hires, bring you know, maybe when our next show, we have a short list of candidates. Obviously, we'll probably give you eight, and we'll have none of them that will actually get hired, just like we did for this head coaching search. But it's a lot of the speculate with the coordinators. You know, there's just so many out there, so many good programs that run good offenses, and they can come from the NFL or college. So probably not a high success rate there, but we'll certainly give you our opinions on who we want. And again, if you watched the previous show, now you're seeing our change of tune. I think the frustration was more just at the athletic director putting us in this situation. So it's just really, really refreshing and good for Summerall to come out there and win the crowd over day one in the fashion he did. And I encourage you guys, if you don't have too much PTSD, go watch the Billy Napier press conference from 3 years ago. It's quite the change of scenery we have in Gainesville.
Watch that and then clean your palate with the John Summerall press conference afterwards, and you'll be able to feel a little bit of a difference.
Viewer discretion advised.
Wow. Certainly still a lot to prove. We got to go out there and win ball games, and he knows that. And Steve Spurrier made that known in the press conference with a little quip during the middle of it that just go win a bunch of games. So he understands the expectations here at Florida.
That was awesome. He did the he said that he's not going to bust out a Spurrier impression because you get the impression is going to win games.
Yeah.
Great.
Love it.
All right. Anything else to add, fellas, before we wrap up?
No, man. Good show.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for listening. Again, we're brought to you by Norse, Norse PA out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you give our boy Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with real estate matters, wills or trust and estate planning. Again, we're part of the Stadium Gale Network. Make sure you're liked and subscribed to our YouTube, Spotify, Apple. Follow us on Twitter. Appreciate everybody engaging on our Twitter recently. Certainly getting more involved there. I think we've hit almost 2,000 people on our poll today, grading Summerall's press conference overwhelmingly an A or an A-plus that you guys have graded Summerall. So appreciate the interactions. And, again, with football ending, certainly we got a whole lot to talk about. Signing day coming up Wednesday. Transfer portal starting in a month. Summerall still potentially going to the college football playoffs. So we could have a little bit of chat about there as we continue to work out kind of our midweek schedule, our weekend schedule. But we just want to bring you guys a pop-up show to discuss the press conference. So we'll see you guys back soon for another episode of Breakfast with the Gators.
Go Gators.
Beat Duke.